So joining us now is Carol Ahoyos, is the chief energy correspondent from the Financial Times, to talk about that artery that goes from Russia through Ukraine into Europe. Yes, January is off to a fairly chilly start in Europe, and Russia has reduced the flow of its gas as part of a pricing dispute with Ukraine. Carol, thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, we understand, that this sort of fight over gas energy from Russia to Europe it's not the first time we've seen this weapon used. But what are the circumstances of the turndown now, and how can this weapon be effective at a moment when prices seem to be not at a high, but more of a low?
Well, in this case, this weapon can be pretty effective even during low prices. You're right. It started, the first real flare-up happened in 2006, so we've been in this situation before. But at the moment, it's I would argue, even more dangerous. Russia and Ukraine are in dire straits. Both of them are suffering substantially from the economic crisis that's engulfing the pretty much the entire globe. And, one thing that doesn't change is that you need gas in the winter in Europe. And this winter is, as you said, a really chilly one. So unlike oil and the oil weapon, when you cut off gas, you start risking the lives of little old ladies sitting in the Alps somewhere in Austria or somewhere in rural Slovenia. And you can't really shift quite as easily as you can when somebody cuts off your oil. You buy it from somebody else. But if Russia cuts off their gas to Europe, it's much, much harder to substitute. So it is still a very potent weapon.
Well, Carol, let's put the weapon in context. From 2006, it seemed as though Putin and the Russian government was attempting to make a political play in Europe to say we are a sort of fossil fuel provider for Europe, do not ignore us or ignore us at your peril. It seems now, with the financial woes of Gazprom very much in the news almost daily, it's more of an extortion play. They just need the cash right now.
Well, it's interesting that you say that. I would argue, in fact, the opposite. In 2006, this was a small pricing dispute between Ukraine and Russia, where Russia had said to Ukraine, look, we're not going to subsidize your gas your gas bill anymore. You no longer belong in our bloc. And then kind of Europe got incredibly frightened suddenly, threw their poker cards up on the table and went, this is going to affect us. We're so incredibly dependent on Russian gas. And in fact, when I talked to EU officials about this, they admit that they reacted really badly in 2006 and gave the game away. And it was really then that Russia kind of went, oh, wow, this is really a potent weapon. And they started wielding it much more. So this thing, everybody has a different theory, but my theory is that it started as an honest pricing dispute and then became much more political rather than the other way around.
Great
now,
theory.
Yeah, but now, it very much is both. And it is a weapon for both the Ukraine and for Russia, because Ukraine is terribly important too as a transit country. So both of them have some leverage, and that leaves Europe, which is dependent for 80% of its Russian gas transiting Ukraine, in the hands of these two parties that really are in a very bitter and long running dispute.
Oh, even though the overland route is long, it's still probably the most cost-effective way of getting gas to Europe. Nevertheless, during the 73 oil crisis, Europe found other ways of getting oil and sort of reshuffled its supply matrix. Is there any chance that Qatar or one of the other big gas suppliers could, through liquefied natural gas or some other source, get Europe out from under this Russian weapon?
That's a really good question, John. Yes, on the one hand, liquefied natural gas has become much more of a play. On the other hand, unfortunately, it is still a very, very small part of the market and a much less flexible one. So to get into kind of the heart of Europe is very, very much more difficult with gas than it is with oil. So really, as I said earlier, the gas weapon is much sharper than the oil weapon. You just can't go to another producer in the same way that you can with oil.
And at least for the time being, the Russians do have this card to play. Finally, do they have any control on pricing here? Does this shutdown of the oil pipeline fluctuate the actual global price of gas? How's that been happening?
Sure, it's affected the gas price, and in fact, it's also affected the oil price because the two are linked. It's not such a huge effect because in the summer we were talking about $147 oil prices and very, very high gas prices, and we're now at about $50 oil. But it's definitely that and the fact that OPEC has cut their production of oil is impacting prices. But on gas, the big question is the long-term price and whether or not they can come to an agreement with that.
And of course, it's a huge issue for, as you say, the little old ladies in the Alps who are dealing with very cold temperatures this January in Europe. Carol Hoyos, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks.
Carol Hoyos is chief energy correspondent for the Financial Times. She spoke with us from London about the situation with Gazprom reducing the amount of gas through Ukraine to Europe, using that gas weapon once again.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.